Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur.
Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 380. Of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyree, your host, as usual. Today, my guest is Joshua Lasteen. And I'm really excited to have Joshua on the show today because Joshua is an entertainment law attorney. And as many of you know, I'm connected to the entertainment industry through my daughter, who is a professional actress in the musical theater world on the West Coast, right there in Los Angeles. So I've seen a lot of what goes on in the entertainment world from the performer side, from the creative side, but very little about what is behind the curtain on the legal side. And Joshua has worked with all the big entities in that arena. Tells a funny story about being working at the mailroom at CAA, which is a large agency, creative agency there in Los Angeles. And he started his practice right after pandemic, and he has built that up in the 3 years since or so into a thriving entertainment law practice. So it's a great opportunity for me to talk about two things that I like a lot: solo and small firm practitioners and the entertainment industry. And there's no better representative of that intersection than Joshua Lasteen. Joshua Lasteen, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Hey, Neil, thank you for having me. Thank you, audience. Thank you for inviting me to be here.
Well, I am really excited to have you on the podcast today, Joshua. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Yeah, so like I said, my name is Joshua Lasteen. I run Lasteen Entertainment Law in Beverly Hills, California. I'm the managing partner there. We have two associates that work underneath us, and we focus on all aspects of entertainment. Mostly contract negotiations, but a little bit of dispute resolution and settlement work, which we can get into in a bit. You know, I'm from a town in the middle of nowhere, Iowa, town of 300 people, but always knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur, always was into starting my own business and looking for efforts to combine creativity with sort of this analytical drive. And that was something that really kind of pushed me to get into entertainment law to begin with, because I was always hopeful to work with both artists and entrepreneurs and business people. So in my capacity, in my 9-to-5 right now, you know, I represent actors, writers, directors, producers, but I also work with small startup companies. One of our clients, you know, they show up to set and train people how to use medical equipment and work with actors and doctors on set so that they perform more real life, you know, doctor lingo or doctor legal speak. Yeah. And so I left Iowa in 2011, went to Pepperdine Law out here in Malibu, worked for a number of entertainment companies while in law school, interned at American Idol, Marvel Studios, Discovery Channel. And then I started my career kind of interestingly at an agency at CAA in the CAA mailroom. If you've ever heard of that, it's kind of a testing pod for entertainment executives, entertainment entrepreneurs, entertainment lawyers, et cetera. Did that for a year, did small private practice for a few years. And then 2021 came and the pandemic hit, found myself kind of laid off and kind of in limbo in terms of looking for a new entertainment job. And that's when I decided to kind of hang out my own shingle and start Lasteen Entertainment. So we've been doing it for 2.5 years now and really enjoy it.
But you already addressed a number of questions that I typically ask our entrepreneurs. And one of those, you said that you always had the idea that you wanted to be an entrepreneur. You wanted to create a business that tapped into the creative world. Where do you think that came from? Maybe, as you said, from a small town of, you know, 300 people. I almost had more than that in my graduating class in high school.
Well, I will say that I am surrounded a lot by entrepreneurs. There's a lot of entrepreneurs in the family. My mom runs her own business. And being from small town Iowa, it is very entrepreneurial. There was not a lot of chain stores and restaurants growing up. A lot of people that I knew owned their own business, tractors, trailers, farming, and construction, more or less. I always knew I wanted to kind of marry that entrepreneurial spirit with some sort of creative arts or creative endeavor. So when I was in Jada, you know, really, really early on growing up, I had aspirations of opening my own comic book shop or own video rent store or something of that. And then later on, that kind of morphed and merged into, you know, there is this sector of business and law that intersects with the arts of, you know, television, film, music, and if, well, NFTs didn't exist, but, you know, physical art, physical media. And it was just about kind of following that into interest to its logical conclusion. I went to business school in Iowa. I went to the University of Northern Iowa, majored in business economics, but I also got a degree in creative writing. So
okay.
Just always kind of on the heels of trying to merge these sort of, you know, analytical right brain thinking, how can I dissect and construct this with the, what kind of creative, you know, work can I put out there in the world and how can I support creative art?
And what prompted a kid from a small town in Iowa to consider law school on the West Coast?
Yeah, I mean, it was really that kind of passion to get into entertainment, business, and law. You know, it's funny, when I was a kid, I think, you know, the first real exposure that I had to the entertainment, business, and legal world, if you remember in 93, the Star Wars special edition box sets that came out, the VHS and the cool golden Darth Vader head box, you know, those VHSs, you know, fast forward to the very end, and they had extensive interviews, you know, with George Lucas and Alec Ladd, who was the executive at Fox, and greenlit it, and, you know, various other, you know, creative business and legal people that were involved in the project. And that really opened my eyes to being like, you know, it doesn't matter what you're interested in. There is got to be a business and legal aspect to that business if it generates money. And, you know, people ask me a lot about entertainment law questions. And a lot of time I kind of phrase it into let's take a step back and look at how the sausage, right? Because an entertainment product isn't too dissimilar from making any other product or service on the market.
It's interesting that, you know, when we talk about where can you find people who practice entertainment law? I mean, just as a general aside, I get that question here in the Washington, D.C. area, you know, on a fairly regular basis. People want to connect with
us. By way.
You know, and they're not around this area, okay? However, comma, where you're located, Southern Cal, L.A. area, specifically in New York, it's one of those things where you can't swing a dead cat without they'll knock you over via an entertainment lawyer or somebody who's working in the entertainment business there. I just also want to make a little side here. You spent some time in the mailroom at CAA. I think that's the moral equivalent to hanging out at the diner Quarter of Hollywood and Vine, right? For an actress?
Kind of. And actually, we refer to it as the Harvard Business School of Entertainment. It's easier to get into Harvard Business School than it is to get into the CA mailroom, but it's really where you cut your teeth and make your deer, if that's what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, exactly. The equivalent to actors going out and, you know, auditioning for 100,000 roles, hitting the pavement really hard. For business and legal affairs executives starting out in an agency mailroom, you know, it's super unglamorous. You're paid minimum wage. You're getting coffee. You're running scripts in the middle of the night. You're dropping off mail. But what it teaches you is just invaluable lessons in terms of who the players are in the industry, how the industry works, how people talk to one another, how contracts are negotiated, and how deal making gets done in this.
And it's where you really learn where you really have the opportunity to see the business firsthand.
Correct. It really pulls back the Wizard of Oz curtain. And I jokingly say, you know, I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy, but it was also the most valuable, you know, 1 year of training and entertainment that I've had in my life in terms of just kind of just exposure to how the entirety of this business is ran, whether that's music, scripted television, unscripted television, indie films, blockbuster films, art, new media, you know, being at the agency got your hands on a little bit of effort.
So my audience is aware of the fact that my daughter's a professional actress, a musical theater artist there in the LA area. So I have some insight into the challenges that are presented in the entertainment industry through her experiences. And you touched on something along the way that I think I want to drill down on a little bit here, because I think there's a common experience between young, or maybe not necessarily young, new solo or small firm law practitioners as they try and build their business, and young aspiring actors and actresses as they try and compete in a very competitive world. And so one of the things that both the attorneys in that scenario and actors and actresses in the other scenario have to learn to deal with is overcoming adversity. And you mentioned that along the way, there was adversity as you developed your craft and your law practice. What are some of the insights that you gain, not only from your own experience, but watching the adversity that your clients have to address?
Yeah. So it's a really interesting comparison, the life of an actor to the life of an entertainment attorney. I can draw a ton of parallels. But it's funny, you know, like my mentor, you know, we're having lunch next week. He's Margot Robbie's attorney, right? Biggest actress on the planet right now with Barbie out. Another good mentor of mine is Ben Stiller's attorney. I mean, it's like, yeah, you're navigating this sea of entertainment where there have been players and sort of these legacy, you know, actors and pieces of talent that have been popular 20, 30, 40, maybe even 60 years. If you're looking at, you know, like the Schwarzeneggers and the Scorseses and stuff like that. But it's, you know, it's all about leveling up and realizing that life is a journey and that it's not about the destination as much as it is about the journey. And every time, you know, I sign a new client, every time I get a call from a celebrity and I'm just kind of like, you know, not wowed, but impressed that they're, you know, reaching out to me, it is about recognizing that that is the win and leveling up. And when you find adversity, I use this phrase, I don't know if you talked about it in your podcast before, but anti-fragility, you know, it's the idea that some things are made stronger by being put through the ringer or being stressed or tested, right? Like our example, your heart is anti-fragile. The more kind of, you know, good stress, I guess, that you put your heart through cardiovascular exercise, the stronger the heart's going to be. And so, you know, every time I'm faced with a near legal challenge in entertainment, AI, for example, is something that I'm, you know, facing right now with a lot of my clients battling. It's about recognizing, okay, this may punch me in the face and knock out a few of my teeth, but tomorrow I'm going to get back up and do it all over again. And just stick with it, because for every battle I have, I just gain that much more experience and become that much better of an attorney.
Well, and to draw the parallel, I'll use my daughter's experience. When she goes for an audition for a part, there can be as many as 400 women competing for the same part.
Yep.
And as you mentioned, you have to work so hard to get recognized. And in some cases, you know, you're cut on tight. I'm sure you understand that. But for our audience, I mean, they trot you out on the stage and look at you and cut you without ever seeing whether you can sing or dance, because you don't fit the appearance, what they have in mind for the part. And, you know, for a woman in particular, but guys too, I think you have to be the strongest type of person to get through this type of adversity and rejection on a systemic basis until you get that part. or until you land that client. And you recognize that all of that has been in preparation for making you stronger to accept the role or to accept the responsibility of a new client. So the parallels, I think, are just glaringly obvious.
Support for today's episode comes from Ruby, the number one client communication solution for growing legal practices. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, Ruby creates exceptional experiences for your callers and website visitors. They take messages, screen and transfer callers, schedule appointments, perform new client intake, confirm details with outbound calls, and can answer in English and Spanish, and a whole lot more. Just like an in-house receptionist, only better, because they turn every ring into a relationship. Ruby can work full-time, part-time, or as a backup, and you can change your instructions anytime with their top-rated mobile app and online dashboard. Plus, Ruby integrates with tools such as Clio, Lexaclara, MyCase, and Rocket Matter. It all adds up to more opportunities and more time saved. In fact, 90% of legal professionals who use Ruby capture more billable hours than the national average, with many recording double or more. That's 5 or more billable hours per day. To experience the Ruby difference for yourself, visit get.ruby.com/ELE. That's get.ruby.com/TLE, as in the law entrepreneur, for up to $150 off your first month. Imagine you, powered by Ruby. As a law firm owner, you take responsibility for driving more revenue for your firm. But how much of that revenue ends up as bottom line profit? Ryan Kimmler, the net profit CFO, helps law firms drive more top line revenue to bottom line profit. His two game-changing tools are the scorecard, so you can actually know what your numbers are and can make informed decisions, and the action plan, so you know how to get your numbers where you want them to be and drive more net profit. To learn more about Ryan, check out episode 306 of The Law Entrepreneur, and you can get a free profit acceleration call by going to onceHub.com/profit. I will also tell you, just as an aside, I am a client of Ryan's. I've been working with him for the past 6 months. Frankly, ever since he did that episode with me, I signed on with him to be a client. And I've been thrilled with the kind of information and insight he's been able to give me. So do yourself a favor. You know, get that free call and check out Ryan Kimmler at netprofit.com.
One of the things that I like to talk about is that there takes a different type of tool from the toolbox for all sorts of work, right? And they paralleling it between actor and lawyer, it takes a lot of different types of lawyers to get the job done, whether that's, you know, in their divorce or whatever. A lot of different types of personalities are involved. And if you are rejected for whatever reason, it may not be as personal as, oh, you're not qualified or cut out for the job. It may be that, you know, hey, you're a thunder guy, but we need a guy that can put his head down and stay quiet and, you know, get a bunch of work done. And if that is a personality, you know, match. Other areas of law, I don't think probably interview as much as we do in entertainment. I feel like when I was in law school in my first years of practice, I felt like an actor. How many interviews I went on to get some of the jobs that I got. But yeah, it's recognizing that everything is for you and that you will find your path. You just have to stay positive and take everything as learning.
So coming out of COVID, that's when you decided to go into practice for yourself. You obviously had a little bit of time to think about it, but it had to be a very scary time to try and start a business, start a practice. Tell us a little bit about how that went, what your decision points were in terms of creating the practice. Did you start, you know, from the kitchen table, or did you immediately, is your business the type that, no, you have to have You have to have that look and that feel, that office environment to move forward, even for the first step. So run us through that scenario a little bit.
Yeah. So I think that this was something that was always rooted in the back of my mind, that I eventually either wanted to start my own practice or have my book of business, whether that was at another law firm or, you know, another partnership or whatever. So starting out in law school, I was very intentional about networking, about going out and meeting, you know, not only other attorneys, but also agents, managers, other studio executives, people that I thought that might be, you know, a beneficial, mutually beneficial relationship in the future that we could potentially work together. So I planted those roots as early on as law school. But I think in law school, one of the things that just really shocked me about the entertainment industry, and this might have just been an eye-opening experience about working in the corporate world altogether, is just how much turnover there was at the corporate level and how many times I saw businesses, you know, be acquired and sold and spun off and various departments overgoing, upsizing and downsizing. And it was really, you know, my first 5-6 years of practice where I saw a ton of that going on. And, you know, talking about and facing adversity that's not necessarily within your control. Early on in my career, I had the opportunity of potentially working with, you know, I hate to say it, but at the time it was the Weinstein Company, right? And in a very, very, very prestigious overall deal with Amazon Studios. And then Harvey Weinstein was, obviously for good reasons, but I found very quickly that my, you know, new position that I had planned out for the next 5 to 10 years had gone up in smoke. And so, you know, off of the heels of that, I had taken another position at a corporation, an entertainment corporation, going into the pandemic. That corporation was, it was in the middle of a merger itself. And one of the things that they told me throughout the interview process is that, you know, the merger is taking place. They've done all the downsizing and upsizing that they need. And this was a role to be around for a while. And then COVID happened, right? And then they ended up laying the whole division, which again, it's circumstances outside of anyone's control. There's no one to blame. You can do everything right. But these kind of force majeure black swan events happen. And that was really the impetus to me that really said, hey, you know, I don't think I want to be tied to a large corporation. I don't think I want to rely on my livelihood being tied to, you know, CEOs who want to trade and buy and sell and make profit for stockholders. I would rather, you know, teach a man to fish than to fish for them. So let's do this. Let's strap on the bootstraps and go at it ourselves. And for the first year, it was all at the kitchen table. It was just, you know, hammering the ground hard and making phone calls. I was very fortunate in that I had a lot of experience and referrals already. You know, I've been working in entertainment since 2011, 2021. So I had about a 10-year, you know, head start in building those connections. But it was super scary. It is super scary. You know, currently right now, we have 2 major strikes happening in Hollywood. And the entertainment industry has kind of been on hold since about March of 2020. So really just kind of going back to that idea of anti-fragility and just looking around and saying, hey, you know, you can do everything right. Things can still go wrong and you can still, you know, potentially lose something. But these things make you stronger in the long run and you'll be able to face it head on the next time adversity comes around.
Yeah, you know, Hollywood's had it rough here. You know, the pandemic was particularly hard on the entertainment industry. And then now you have, as you said, the two major strikes going on. And, you know, there's always a management labor issue to be dealt with in any type of industry. But when it hits home like this and affects the entertainment products that the rest of the world relies on and consumes, it becomes more important and more obvious to a lot of people. I want to touch on something that strikes me. You know, as an entertainment lawyer, you said you were planting the seeds back in law school in terms of developing your network. I'm going to guess that an entertainment law practitioner, for them, you can't go about getting clients the same way other folks do. You can't, billboard advertising isn't gonna work. Social media and content marketing and all that might have some minor role, but in your business, it's pressing the flesh, it's meeting people, it's developing those relationships, is it not?
Absolutely. You know, I try all sorts of different marketing and advertising initiatives. I have social media, you know, the Instagram, TikTok, Twitters, and Facebooks and stuff. Sure. But it really probably, I would guesstimate 90% of my business is through word of mouth referrals, either through other attorneys and or agents, managers, and business handlers, I guess you'd say, are probably 90% of our referrals.
I mean, how do you keep all that straight? Do you use a tool or do you have the proverbial Hollywood Rolodex?
We have the proverbial Hollywood Rolodex.
Is that right?
Which is, you know, it's one of the things that I really enjoyed about being out in Hollywood, you know, in 2011. I feel like now in 2021, if you're entering into Hollywood, there are a lot of things that were old legacy Hollywood jargon or institution within the Hollywood system that are no longer there. The Rolodex now is kind of, you know, gone by the wayside. But yeah, I have, you know, I call it my master contacts list that I've been putting together since 2011. And it's got, you know, probably about 750 of my closest entertainment connections. And then from the list there, you know, it boils down to like the 50 people who are the most number of clients, and then the 25 to 20 people that are, you know, hopefully if for whatever reason, stranded on the side of the road, we might pick you up each other on the side, in the middle of the night.
It sure would make me happy to actually know that there is a gigantic, real, physical Rolodex, but I suspect not. So our audience
is not if there's a goal anymore.
Obviously. Yeah, exactly. But for our younger audience, you might want to look up what a Rolodex is. So now you've moved off the kitchen table and you're in an established space. Now you're working with building your own staff, hiring people to help you create the vision that you have for your law firm. What are some of the challenges you have in that regard, and how are you overcoming that adversity?
You know, I think the challenges that I'm facing right now are the challenges that any entrepreneur or any business would face, not necessarily particular to law, but it's really the battle of how do we navigate this post-COVID world when so much of our work, you know, can be done remotely, but at the same time, there is so much value in that interperson, the person-to-person connections, especially for what it is that we do, right? And so finding attorneys who are, you know, interested in the subject matter, interested in the entertainment, Hollywood side of things, you know, it unlike other areas of law, I don't feel like you can really treat this as a 9-to-5 job. You can't really go home and forget about it as much as you can with particularly other areas of law. You have to know the history of Hollywood, and you have to know who the current players are. You have to know the phases an entertainment product goes through, from the ideation development phase to the production, the making of concept phase, to the distribution and getting it out to consumer. Kind of have to understand how all of those aspects work to be a good entertainment lawyer. So we look for people who are passionate about entertainment and passionate about the product, because those are the ones that really want to learn not only the legal side, but also the history and the complexities that go. So passionate is hard.
Yeah, and I think, you know, everybody typically says, well, my practice is unique, or, you know, my practice area can be run the same way as others. I really do think entertainment law, particularly at the vortex of where you're located, it is fundamentally different, because just as you said, there's so much work that's done after the sun goes down. Yeah, there's so much networking. There's so many meetings. There's so many relationships built in the evening hour, and so there is no separation of my daytime job, my nighttime life. It has to be, to some degree, one and the same. And on top of that, as you mentioned, you can have a distributed workforce and let folks work from home or from wherever they are, but you also have to have a lot of physical contact and you know, be with the clients and be on the move. So I imagine keeping all those moving parts in order and juggling all that is a pretty tall task.
Yeah, you know, I was just thinking about this the other day. We're going back to that Rolodex. I got, you know, of that 750 people, probably 400 of which I want to try to meet over the course of 12 months. That's a lot of lunches, breakfasts, and dinners. Squeeze 400 people in 365 days.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So, all right. Well, Joshua, this has been really fascinating. I really have enjoyed having the opportunity to learn a little more about the entertainment law, the legal side of the entertainment industry. As I said, I understand it from the performer side. If our audience wants to connect with you or kind of reach out in any way, what's the best way for them to do so?
Yeah, sure. So our website is lastineentertainmentlaw.com, LASTINE entertainmentlaw.com. You can also find us on Instagram at Lastine Law. Again, LASTINE Law on Instagram. And yeah, reach out and we'll try our best to get back to you.
Awesome. Well, we'll have all of that in our show notes for everybody who's on the treadmill or in the car at the moment. And again, I want to thank you ever so much for taking the time today to be with us on The Law Entrepreneur. And next time I'm out there in Hollywood, I'd love to get that cup of coffee or that breakfast meeting with you.
Let's do it. Thank you so much, Neil. Thank you, audience. I really appreciate you having me today.
Well, there you have it, boys and girls, another episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors for this episode, our good friends at Ruby. I can't say enough about Ruby. As you know, they've been my virtual receptionist for years now. Couldn't be happier with them. And I really urge all of you, if you need a virtual receptionist, that you give Ruby a chance. Also, Net Profit CFO, as I've mentioned before, Ryan Kimler was a guest on the program some time ago. I liked what he had to say so much, I became a client. And then after I became a client, he became a sponsor. So very happy about that arrangement. If you want to take your understanding of your financials in your law firm to that next step beyond just what your bookkeeper gives you back, give Ryan a call at Net Profit CFO. I don't think you'll be disappointed. If you enjoyed this podcast, do me the great favor of leaving a positive rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. It really helps with the opportunity for us to get in front of other people. And until next week, I wish you all the best, and we'll see you again here on Law Entrepreneur.